June 21st, 1940, a date for the history books. Today, in the woods of Compiègne, Hitler's terms of an armistice are offered to France. And on this regular roundup of news from Europe, NBC brings you reports direct from two belligerent capitals and a commentary by Earl Godwin from our own capital in Washington. First, go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin. It is announced that the French government has also sent a formal request for an armistice to Italy. In England, in addition to the bombing of the nitrate plant in Billingham near Newcastle and Hull, Bristol and Southampton have been attacked by German air forces, it is announced. More than 40,000 French troops have crossed the border into Switzerland, where they have been interned by the Swiss. The Frankfurter Zeitung and the Völkischer Beobachter this morning both devote their leading editorials to the capture of Strasbourg by the Germans. Strasbourg has been a bone of contention between Germans and Frenchmen for centuries. Both consider it an integral part of their national life. Germans, because the city and the province of Alsace is German by blood, speech, and tradition. Frenchmen, because it participated in the rebirth of France in the Great Revolution. For Germans, its return to Germany in 1871 was an act of justice. And Frenchmen felt the same way when it became French again in 1918. Now it is German again, and the Völkischer Beobachter sums the situation up by saying that that population, national strength, and national accomplishments must be in proper relation to the area in which nations operate. From this point of view, the history of the western boundary of Germany is of interest only insofar as it shows how France behaved when it was the stronger state in population and in its organization. The Frankfurter Zeitung points out that Adolf Hitler was ready and willing to abandon all claims for the return of Strasbourg and Alsace-Lorraine to Germany, provided that France on her part gave up her ancient hostility to Germany. But France declared war on Germany. Now the swastika flag waves from the spire of the Strasbourg Minster, from which the paper says it will never vanish in favor of an alien state. The old dream of French predominance is over. National Socialist Germany will find another way than the former German Empire to bring the old city on the Rhine into its fold. The Frankfurter Zeitung also goes into the question of the effect of the French collapse on the Balkans. A new day is dawning for southeastern Europe. The first to see the light is Hungary, which, as one of the heaviest losers as a result of the last war, proportionally perhaps the heaviest of all, has consistently adhered to the Axis powers. Count Teleki, the Prime Minister, last Monday announced that Hungary, as a non-belligerent, ranged herself on the side of Germany, looking on her as an ally, and prepared to do her duty toward Germany and Italy. From Holland, it is reported that the bank moratorium, which was imposed on the day when the Germans came in, has been lifted, and the stock exchange is expected to reopen shortly. The liquidity of the banks in Holland does not seem to have been impaired. In Norway, business is resuming on normal lines. Factories are open and running to capacity. Railroad service has been resumed almost everywhere. It is stated that the line from Bergen to Oslo is open for traffic again, although 17 bridges that had been destroyed have had to be repaired. The total length of ruined bridges which German military engineers have rebuilt is over 2,000 meters. Postal and telephone communications with northern Norway will soon be resumed. At the press conference today, the appointment of Messrs. Stimson and Knox to cabinet posts in Washington was brought up, but it was said that the matter is regarded here as an internal American affair and is not of interest here, perhaps to Japan in connection with Mr. Knox. A communique is expected to be issued this afternoon in regard to the armistice negotiations when the German plenipotentiaries will be named. In most of the Balkan states, sympathies for France have been greater than England, less so perhaps in Hungary than in the others, but a difference is always made between the two. Sympathy for France continues, and satisfaction is felt there that Paris was spared from destruction. This was spared from destruction. The Balkan states will remain neutral, says the correspondent of the Frankfurter Zeitung, and will carry the derangement of their economic life as best they can. Greece has been compelled to ration bread, sugar, and other foods, as well as electric current and motor fuel. Romania is suffering in her shipping from the extension of the war to the Mediterranean, as is Yugoslavia. The latter state has had to curtail her output of textiles and other manufactured goods. The Balkans are making arrangements to adapt themselves to the new phase of the war and hope that it will all be over soon. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
That was a report direct from the German capital, Berlin. Now for a report from NBC staff newsman in the capital of Great Britain. Go ahead, London.
This is London at about 6 minutes past one. Fred Bates speaking. There were no German aircraft over Britain last night. The Air Ministry, however, announced that British raids were carried out over the Ruhr and Rhineland. Two British planes failed to return. Visibility was not too good, and anti-aircraft fire is said to have been heavy. A German plane did fly over a south coast town this morning for 35 minutes. Bursts of machine gun fire were heard. No bombs were dropped. It is learned in London this morning that the Polish government, which has been more or less in a state of flux ever since the Germans marched on Warsaw, has now arrived in this country. Angers, the temporary refuge of the Poles in France, is now like Warsaw, in German hands. General Sikorsky and Mrs. Zelensky, the foreign minister, are expected to be given an official welcome sometime today. Incidentally, there are more foreign governments here than ever in the history of Britain. The representatives of Norway, Poland, Holland, Czechoslovakia, and Abyssinia are now working in one way or another out of this country. And it is expected that the Belgians who took refuge in France, those who can, will be here before long. The editors and makeup men of the big national papers here make it quite clear this morning that the country is pleased over President Roosevelt's decision to bring Mr. Henry Stimson and Colonel Frank Knox into his cabinet. This move is erroneously labeled as an American coalition, and the general tendency here is to interpret the news as an indication that President Roosevelt is trying to do everything he can to strengthen the pro-Allied forces in America. Here are typical headlines. United States will have war cabinet. Mr. Roosevelt moves for more pro-ally ministry. And a real wishful thinking head says, stop Hitler now, men, join United States cabinet. There is, in addition, a tendency here to quote all the representatives of the senators in Washington who say this morning that this means the United States is about to come into the war. The Daily Mail is the only morning paper, however, to comment. The president's action, the paper says, is a warning that the United States really does mean business. Now, the paper adds, is not the time to speculate on America's further intentions, but be sure that the signs will be read by Hitler and Mussolini. It is evident here today that the War Office is about to do something about the hundreds of thousands of young men who have been called up for military service without actually having gone into training. Under a new official scheme, these men will go into tent camps and train in civilian clothes with wooden rifles and broomsticks, as the Kitchener Army did and as we did in America during the last war. Meanwhile, there is a movement to make up for the arms shortage by manufacturing hundreds of thousands of hand grenades and distributing them widely. Every man in the anti-parachute troop squad, says the Daily Express, should be armed with hand grenades. Every man who can throw a cricket ball could use them. Britain's slogan, suggests the Express, should be a hand grenade dump at every village pump. The French plenipotentiaries were reported early this morning to have laid Chancellor Hitler's peace terms before the French government. Reports here indicate that Marshal Pétain and his cabinet received the terms just before they were forced by a heavy bombardment to evacuate Bordeaux. The terms were probably first considered while the cabinet was moving to the south of France. There is still no official indication here as to the details of the terms, but the tone of the German press is far from conciliatory. If the Berlin press reflects the true feelings of the German government, France can't look forward to very much. An official British communique from the Near East says that at least 15 Italian planes have been brought down and five more probably lost during the past 48 hours as a result of Allied air activity. Further reports printed in the Daily Telegraph this morning state that the Abyssinian tribes are now in revolt against their Italian conquerors. These revolts, it is said, have been inspired by Royal Air Force raids on Italian bases in Abyssinia. The naval correspondent of the News Chronicle writes that at the present moment, Germany can probably muster the following ships, 4 35,000 tons, 2 26,000 tons, armed respectively with 15-inch and 11-inch guns, and the notorious pocket battleships Deutschland and Admiral Scheer. Italy's main strength at sea, he says, resides or shortly will reside in 8 battleships, of which 4 are new and of 35,000 tons with a speed of 30 knots, a main armament of 9 15-inch guns, and very heavy protection. It is claimed that these ships will be the finest and the most efficient battleships in the world. He gives the following comparative table, which may be interesting. Battleships, Great Britain, 21. Germany and Italy, 16. France, 11. Cruisers, heavy and light. Great Britain, 80. Germany and Italy, 36. France, 21. Aircraft carriers, Britain, 11. Germany and Italy, 2. France, 2. Destroyers, Britain, 196. Germany and Italy, 160 with a question mark. France, 86. Submarines, Britain, 65. Germany and Italy, 164, queried. France, 95. Various smaller craft, Britain, 35. Germany and Italy, 121, again queried. France, 30. This is London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
And that was a report direct from London. Next, we turn to our own capital on this side of the Atlantic. Here is Earl Godwin reporting from the NBC newsroom in Washington.
Good morning. The town's still echoing with the cheers and jeers directed against the stunning cabinet changes President Roosevelt slipped over on the country yesterday. He took 2 aggressive Republicans. This is the first time a president has reached into the heart of the opposition to take on 2 strong political opponents since Lincoln's time, and the thing has so confused the Republicans at Philadelphia that their chieftain, John Hamilton, immediately read out of the party their previous associate standard bearer, Frank Knox, Chicago publisher, chosen for the Navy portfolio. He was former vice presidential candidate with Landon, and also Harry Stimson, one of the few men in history chosen for cabinet posts by 2 Republican presidents, Taft and Hoover, and I think possibly the only man who's been not only chosen by 2 Republican presidents, but at last also by a Democrat. The president has wanted to change cabinet officers in the War and Navy portfolios for a long time. He has not been satisfied with certain policies of Secretary of War Woodring, not entirely satisfied with Charles Edison, Secretary of the Navy. These are administrative dislikes merely. Woodring, first Democratic governor of Republican Kansas, was originally Assistant Secretary of War, and on the death of the previous secretary, succeeded to his job. Although for a long time he was only acting secretary, not nominated as complete secretary until after the president had taken a good long look. But Woodring is 100% strong in Kansas Democratic politics. And Kansas politics, helped largely by Guy Helvering, National Committeeman and Internal Revenue Bureau Chief, helped cement Woodring to the job in the cabinet, wherein he immediately fell afoul of Louis Johnson, Assistant Secretary of War, who has clashed with his chief time and time again, much to the distress of the president. In the case of Edison, the son of the famed inventor, who's about to leave to campaign for governor of New Jersey on the Democratic ticket, he would have preferred to remain in the cabinet until sometime in August, but the Democratic managers in New Jersey said, "Edison is a grand old name in Jersey, and we need you, Charlie, for campaign purposes now." So he resigns and will be leaving in a few days. Meantime, compulsory war training for 40 million men from 18 to 65 is before the Military Affairs Committee of the Senate in the form of a bill. It provides 8 months training for men between 21 and 45, but it provides for training for all ages in some form of defense duty. Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's all from Washington this morning.
NBC has just brought you another of its regular morning roundup of the news, featuring reports from 3 great capitals of the world, Berlin, London, and Washington. This is the National Broadcasting Company.